This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. The Indy 500 was the biggest sporting event in the world since the pandemic started. Today, we're talking about how it went and learning about some efforts in Indiana and across the country to make auto racing more diverse. If you have any questions or comments for the show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail by giving us a call at 866-476-3881. We're joined now by Samantha Horton, business reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Samantha, you've been covering this for a while now. I want to start with Peretta Autosport. They made a lot of headlines this year. What is special about that team in particular?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me first, I guess. But just the big thing is majority women's team. I mean, we're talking about a woman owner, woman driver, as well as a majority of women crew members. So this was a big push to really get women representation out on the track. And I think based off of Lisa, we'll dive into this a little more further here in a moment. But I think, you know, based on what we saw, there was, you know, response and people did take notice of this team this year.
Mm-hmm. And how did Peretta do?
So they finished 31st out of 33 cars. They started in the 33rd position after, you know, qualifying, which the qualifications are always, you know, extremely competitive and tough to, you know, get through. So just making the race was a, you know, accomplishment of itself. But I mean, they had a pit lane issue, so they didn't necessarily finish the race, but they did better than two other drivers and teams. So they still, you know, were on the track, were visible, you know, and for their first race ever, right. You know, being there was a big deal.
Yeah. I would imagine for this being their first race, just to be in the 33 group is a pretty big deal. What about, you know, since this was their first race, what is ahead for them now? Like after this race, have you heard from them what their plans are?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously this was, yeah, taking on the Indy 500, which is one of the, you know, most coveted like races for drivers to compete in and win. This was a big undertaking, but I mean, I know at one point there was plans to try to do a few races ahead of time. A lot of this is working out balancing. A lot of these team members are, you know, were either working with Team Penske and were, you know, brought onto the team for this race, or, you know, Simona DiSilvestro was herself is competing in another with Porsche in another series. So that's all, you know, it was all balancing of schedules and timing, but there is plans. This is not a one and done team. This isn't just a compete in the Indy 500 and that's it. There is, based off of talking with Beth Peretta, the owner, there is those plans to try to either later this season or at least next year, try to get into more IndyCar races.
And what else did you hear feedback-wise from the Peretta team about, you know, whether they had an impact on people or are more women interested in getting involved in racing?
Yeah, I mean, for the team, I think there was a lot of excitement. You know, talking to a few of the team members, they've worked mostly on teams with mostly men. So it was for them really exciting to work on a team with mostly women. And I mean, they were getting, you know, notes from parents of daughters, from girls themselves who saw the team, you know, whether it was at a practice session or, you know, during qualifications or race day, you know, just already, you know, being like, like maybe there is a role for me here. And I think that's part of this bigger picture of with representation and talking about, you know, why it's so important for people to see, you know, women not just driving or not just owning a team, which has been the past, but more, you know, the crew members or engineers, which there have been women in those roles, but this is just now kind of putting it in like a bigger presence. And I think of one girl I talked to that's like 7 years old and her mom, for them, it's been a conversation about, you know, possibilities. Maybe she doesn't go into motorsports, but at the same time, she's not, you know, she can consider it as an option. At least she sees herself possibly as wanting to do that. So I think that's kind of one of the goals of Peretta is just kind of make, you know, maybe young girls more aware of, you know, possible career paths that maybe they just haven't seen others, you know, other women in necessarily as much to think of that as an option.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it's important to see yourself in these types of fields. And it's interesting because I was just thinking about racing and I don't think, you know, I ever paid attention that there weren't women. I mean, I knew there weren't women, but you'd hear about like the first woman driver or something like that. But I didn't realize there wasn't like an actual team. So that's really interesting to learn about. Did you hear anything from people on Peretta or anyone else about why there have been so few women involved? Is there Is there a culture that doesn't allow for women to be part of this?
I wouldn't go so far as say that, but I mean, you do look at the numbers. There's 9 women drivers who have competed in the Indy 500. I think there's a couple others who have tried to qualify, but 9 actually have, you know, been in the race. And, you know, then there's, you know, there's been women, there's been owners, there have been, you know, a few women who have like gone over the wall, so to speak. So when the cars come in for a pit stop, they're the ones that jump over, you know, and service the car before it takes off again. So there have been some, but it's just when you put the numbers in against, you know, the men who have done these same jobs, it's just so there's such a big difference. And I think I talked to like one gearbox mechanic with another team, Anna Chatton, who's been in the industry for a long time, and she wasn't fully sure why not herself, I guess. She was also kind of thinking, you know, when she started and she's one of the few women, she thought there'd be plenty more behind her. So there is that, you know, difference. I have a clip here from Beth Coretta, the team owner, talking about, you know, kind of the, you know, how the women know each other there, but she sees this as a, you know, this team giving a chance to highlight, you know, the possibilities and how women can actually not only be a part of, you know, auto racing, but also thrive in this industry.
And I just saw it as really an opportunity to get more fans. If there are more women in the sport, maybe more women fans would watch the sport. And beyond that, there's also the transferable skills that we see every day of working on a race team and also working for either a car company or in other industries. Like, these are transferable skills. So seeing all of those ingredients, I thought, okay, we can do a lot more with this. And what better way to do it than with a race team? Because a race team is exciting. We might grab your attention, follow our story, and maybe it could impact somebody's career trajectory.
And so, I mean, that's a really interesting quote to hear, that she's pushing forward for this stuff. So do you think after this year, there might be more teams? I don't know how hard it is to put a team together in racing. I'm not an expert on this field. So could there be potentially more all-female teams after this?
I will say it is a lot. Putting a team together is, you know, it's a huge lift by any means. And I know Peretta actually had technical support with Roger Penske, who's been really pushing the Race for Equality and Change initiative at the track. And I know you'll talk later with someone who's, you know, overseeing some of that. But, you know, that's, you know, with that support, I think that was something that's highlighted, that is like, you know, with such a quick turnaround too from this announcement in January, this would have been very hard. So getting a team together is really hard. But I think the more the goal is not necessarily to see an all women team, but to see more women on teams working with, you know, with the men, and just a more balance of, you know, seeing women and men working side by side. I think that's more the, like, kind of the overall perspective and the goal, not necessarily let's just have more women teams.
Right, right. So more of like a co-ed sort of environment. And yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see how that takes place. I do want to talk a little bit more about just the race. You know, this was the biggest sporting event. I don't want to say post-COVID, because we're still in the middle of it, but, you know, with some of these vaccinations and precautions in place. What was it like for you attending this race? Were there any precautions in place?
Yeah, so I mean, this has been going. I mean, Indianapolis Motor Speedway and Marion Health Department, County Health Department, have been, you know, working together, as well as Indiana State, you know, State Health Department, trying to put together a plan. And it was determined that it would be at 40% capacity, which is still 135,000 people. So that's still significant. I know officials were saying that's the largest sporting event for people to attend, you know, since the start of the pandemic. So this is obviously a huge lift. Face masks were still required. You'd see some of the yellow shirt people who, like, are staff at the IMS, are like holding little signs reminding people to wear face masks. They, you know, would remind people if, you know, they were walking around not eating or, you know, consuming a beverage, to like try to wear their mask. But I mean, it is, you know, as we've all seen, you know, with businesses even trying to force this, you can only go, you know, there's only so much you can sometimes do. But there was that as part of a screening. I know for the garages and pit lane, I believe it was with the close contact with the teams, you had to have proof of your vaccination to have those, to be in a close contact with the teams. And then as well as they had vaccination stations at IMS even during the race. So for people who maybe hadn't gotten vaccinated yet, there's been a huge push, because I think the goal was that they kept their efforts up. About 60% of attendees would be vaccinated was kind of the numbers that were estimated. So there was a huge push to continue to get people vaccinated to try to make it, you know, a safe event for people to attend.
Mm-hmm. And what was the atmosphere like? I'm curious, compared to last year, did it seem, I mean, there weren't fans last year, right?
No, there was no spectators. So obviously right, so. The energy was way more than it was before. You had Purdue marching band. I mean, it was everything, you know, maybe that you didn't have, well, not everything, but, you know, a lot of things that maybe were missed out on in 2020 that, you know, were from previous years. Not everything was back all the way yet, but, you know, a lot of people thought of it as like a little bit of that closer to returning to normal.
Mm-hmm. And then what about, you know, the success of this event? Do you think it was a huge success for the Speedway, for businesses?
I would say I based off of what I got with the notes for like releases from Indianapolis Motor Speedway officials, I believe they considered it so. I mean, they sold out of tickets, and with selling out of the 135,000 tickets, they were able to lift the local television blackout to allow like people in central Indiana to watch the race live, which has only happened. This is the third time in the, like, since 1950, I believe, that has happened. So that was in one of those would be last year, and the other one was the 100th anniversary. So pretty significant to be able to do that. And I think then now it's just almost being excited to try to have it at full capacity next year.
Mm-hmm. And just real quick, so the TV blackout, normally they don't televise this race?
They do not televise it locally. It's essential Indiana here. You can listen to it on the radio, I believe, but not, you cannot watch it. It's, you can see it later in the, like in after the race, but you cannot see it live. No.
Okay. Well, maybe this will set some precedent for the future so that everyone in Indiana can enjoy the race. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Samantha Horton, business reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. We'll be back with our guests after a quick break. We're talking about the Indy 500 and efforts to make the world of auto racing more inclusive and more diverse. If you have any questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobel. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. All In, I'm Miriam Soap. We're talking today about the Indianapolis 500, which happened over the weekend and was the biggest sporting event in the world since the pandemic started, with about 135,000 fans. If you want to station with your questions or comments, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. You can also send a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All in Vox Pop. Just search for All in Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it onto the show. Joining us now is Jimmy McMillan, Chief Diversity Officer for the Penske Entertainment Corporation. Thank you so much for joining us, Jimmy.
Thank you, Miriam. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Now, I want to talk about diversity, and I know when we talk about diversity in different sports, for some of us, like myself, the last thing that comes to mind is auto racing. I'm curious why you think that is, that most people don't associate auto racing with diversity.
Well, it's really unfortunate and something we're really trying to change. I think traditionally it's been thought of as a very expensive sport, a very monolithic sport, a sport that often takes place in non-urban areas and rural areas. A lot of the tracks are not located in inner cities. And quite frankly, it's something that you can't or you don't see kids growing up in really high school, elementary school, getting a chance to participate in and learn about. And so it's something that we're working really hard to change here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and NTT IndyCar Series.
Well, how diverse is auto racing right now? I mean, if you looked back, let's say 10 years to now, has anything changed?
Well, I think what we talked about earlier is from a gender perspective, we've seen some great growth in that area. We certainly have a long way to go, but you've seen some great drivers like Danica Patrick, Pippa Mann, recently Simona De Silvestra and the Beretta Autosport team. There are motorsport series that are strictly dedicated to women, just like you see in the WNBA. We've had women who are competing over in the F1 series who are coming up in F1. And we have women who are competing in the R Junior series coming up in our series. If you look at sprint and midget cars, you see a lot of gender diversity as it's starting to develop in the pits, as women are growing in engineers. The chief engineer for Firestone is a woman. you see that gender diversity. We have not necessarily seen the racial diversity that we strive for, but we believe that that is something that we've got to work on, that's something that we're going to make strides to, and something that we're going to improve on.
Right. And I mean, obviously, as you said, we're seeing some strides in gender diversity, but not as much in racial diversity. Have you heard from folks on why, for example, communities of color are not coming out to the track, whether as spectators or trying to get involved?
Yes, I think there's historical reasons behind it. I think in the past, again, some of the sport, just like many of the things that we have, unfortunately, in this world, at one point, the sport may have been prohibitive to people of color. We've heard about stories and seen the stories and seen the videos of races with Dixie flags and Confederate flags. Sometimes that was viewed as something that was not just about Southern pride, but said usually was viewed by some as a message for people of color not to come to the racetrack. There are certainly stories about drivers in the past, like Charlie Wiggins, who was a famous African-American driver here in Indianapolis, probably one of the greatest drivers of his time, who was not allowed to race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. He was a mechanic on some of the teams here, but had to act like he was a janitor because they were not allowed to have African-Americans on the pit crew teams at the Indy 500. This facility stands on the cusp of one of the historic Black neighborhoods, the Indianapolis Hallville, but yet many people in Indianapolis have never been here because they have felt that they were not welcome and that this was a quote-unquote white sport. We are doing everything in the world under Roger Penske's leadership to change that because it's just simply not true. The sport is really designed and meant for all. We want to remove the barriers for entry as a fan. We want to remove the barriers for entries as engineers, drivers, administrative professionals. We think this is a sport that everyone can enjoy. And me, personally, being a fan for so long, I know for a fact that there is a place for everyone.
Well, I do wonder, you know, there are efforts being made, but how do you remove... I'm trying to think of like how to say this, but like a community that feels hurt and forgotten and treated in such a way. And then to say now you can come enjoy this.
It starts with the love of the sport itself. I mean, I fell in love with it when I heard the engines, the motor of a NASCAR crank up and saw the cars, the colors. And we've got to get people in to get them exposed to the sport. Our race for equality and change has a couple of different avenues that we're attacking. One, we're looking at our own employee bases. We have to be willing to invest and employ talented people of color, talented women, which we thankfully are, from a gender perspective, we're actually pretty successful. About 40% of our full-time staff are women. But we've got to be willing to reach out and get talented folks to work here so that they can tell us how to communicate with our community and send that message. And we've got to figure out a way to retain them. Second, it's who we spend money with. So we have a procurement program where we're working to develop relationships and engage and spend money with MBEs and WBEs, minority business enterprises and women business enterprises, because you can't expect anyone to come through your door who you're not willing to spend money with. Third, it's about what we have on track in our paddock. And you see it with our investment in Peretta Autosport as a technical partner, but also with our new Force Indy team, which is a team which is developed based on underrepresented minorities who run that team. Principal Rod Reed is African-American. Our driver, Miles Rowe, is African-American. And many of the engineers on that team are African-American. It also is about working with youth in the community. So we are working with a program called NXG Youth Motorsports, which is a go-karting, STEM, and character development program that has existed in the Speedway for 15 years. We have upped the investment into that program and, in fact, are working to expand that program to a full-season program in Detroit next year. So we will have two chapters of NXG next year. We're also working with other programs like Kids on Track, Soapbox Derby, and other local community programs to get youth involved and engaged in the sport. And then we also are looking for ownership. Diverse owners, we believe, are also a key to enhancing and making sure that we are making communities feel welcome. And then finally, it's just the events that we're able to host. We're a beautiful facility, one of the greatest facilities in the world. We host the largest sporting event in the world. We're starting to host events for people like Indiana Black Expo, the Hispanic Business Council, but we're making our doors open for folks to come and have their events and feel welcome at our facility.
Now, I know earlier you mentioned it's important for folks to fall in love with racing in order to want to be involved. What was your experience like? How did you get involved in racing?
So it's a weird story. I was in college doing well, and all of a sudden, as a result of a tragedy, my father shot my mother, and I flunked out of school. And I had to get a job working at different places. I ended up at a Firestone in Bloomington, where the mechanics down there used to listen to the race on Sundays and tease me about being a black kid from the south side of Chicago who knew nothing about racing. And then finally, they bought me to a Brickyard 400 race. And there were 280,000 people in the stands. The cars were colorful, loud, noisy. And I absolutely loved it. And I became a NASCAR fan and a Tony Stewart fan. And that became my absolute favorite sport. And from that, I started growing up around here, really. I got into motorcycles, became the president of the largest motorcycle club in town. I also became a partner at a law firm, imagine that, and ended up wanting to do a community service project for a local community center in Hallville. And came in sight unseen, asked the track to do this community service project. They asked me how many motorcycles would be here. I said about 300, turned out to be about 7,000. And it was the largest gathering of African-Americans in the track to date. And they really, really kind of built a relationship. From that, I started to use the Indianapolis 500 as a professional development tool because I realized so many African-Americans and Latinos had probably not been to the race. I would get seats for the race and invite general counsel from other places to come and see it. And it became something that they never forgot. It was that bucket list thing that once they saw those 33 cars, our opening ceremony, Miriam, I wish you could come and see it. You would want to come every year. It's a tradition that is inescapable, and it is the greatest spectacle on earth. There is nothing like the Indianapolis 500.
You know, I mean, I never considered going to a race, to be honest, because I always felt like if I went there, I would just stick out. I wouldn't fit in. But it's good to hear that there are some initiatives and changes being made. How would you persuade someone like me to go to their first race who's very hesitant?
Well, I would invite you personally to come, and I want you to come. And if you decide to come, I will get you tickets to come, some really great ones. So just reach out to me, because I know that if you saw it, you will fall in love with it. You know, I'll tell you this. My mother is from Louisville, Mississippi, deep south. And when I came here and decided to come here 5 years ago, her question was, are you sure that place is going to stay open? And I told her, Ma, I'm pretty sure that a lot of other things will, companies here will move to Mexico before the Indianapolis Motor Speedway closes. She knew absolutely nothing about racing. And if I could show you pictures, her favorite driver, Will Power, who was a winner of the 2018 Indianapolis 500, he came to her house this year, and she had a huge barbecue, fed the whole neighborhood in excitement. She has an entourage of about 40 or 50 of her cousins who all come up from Mississippi for the race. These are all African Americans. These are all people who knew nothing about racing, but they saw it once, went back, told their friends, they came up, and every year gets bigger. That group gets bigger and bigger and bigger from people who just observe it. It really is spectacular, and it touches your soul to see 33 cars doing 220, 230 miles an hour all at the same time. But the pageantry around it makes you so proud to be an American. And it makes you so proud of what we've accomplished from a technological standpoint. And it really is something that, because you would be there, it would be even more of the experience that it's supposed to be, an American experience that celebrates people like you, people like me, people like all of us coming together on Memorial Day weekend to celebrate motorsports.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, I think you've kind of sold me there, maybe. But what impact do you think sports has on bringing people together? You know, there's so many sports in our country, but like what particularly about motorsports do you think would be able to bring people together?
135,000 people in the largest sporting event since since COVID started. We believe that that event, and that it will usher us into and back into where we would all like to be. We don't all want to be separated and sitting at home with masks on. We are all hopeful that the vaccine and everything that's been done from a scientific standpoint will keep us safe. And sports, if you think about it, throughout this entire pandemic, has been the barometer for what we can and cannot do, what we're allowed to do as a country, not only in terms of the pandemic, but also in terms of social justice and what we saw happen with the death of George Floyd and the murder of George Floyd. We've watched sports to determine where are we going as a country? What are we doing? And it's been our athletes, thankfully, and our sanctioning bodies that have really led the charge in bringing us back and saying, this is what we want to do. This is what we want to stand for. It's okay to stand up against injustice. It's okay to demand equality. That's what sports can do for our community and our country. And I think that's what this place, in terms of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and our series, is attempting to do, both with our Race for Equality Change and the fact that we have the Indianapolis 500 with the 135,000 fans. We were trying to lead, and that's the role of sports.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, you mentioned you fell in love with this stuff long ago, and then you came to work for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. What was that like to come and actually work for the racetrack?
Not had one bad second at work since May 2nd, 2016. Every day of my job feels like Disney World. If you were here in my office right now looking out over Turn 1 of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and Gate 1, you would understand the joy that I have working here. This is not made up or something I get paid to say or do. I literally feel like what it would feel like for a kid to work at Disney World. The things that we're able to see and put on, sometimes it's like working for the circus because I'm also the lawyer for the track as well as the chief diversity officer. So sometimes I'm the office of no. But we put on some amazing events. We've had air races. We've had motorcycle races. We've had cars jumping out of tunnels and stunts. And trying to figure out how we can have safely. It is absolutely phenomenal. And you would love it, too. And I can't wait to get you.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit more about sort of the workforce there at IMS. We talked about diversity and increasing it in the racing. What about within the workforce there? How important of an impact do you think that would be?
I think it'd be very big. We have about 230 employees full time. And then from a part time perspective, event base, there's probably like another 1500 people who are bought in for our event, security, vending, other aspects of our event. But if that core 240, one of the great things is we have a lot of women represented in leadership and our executive leadership ranks, including my boss, Gretchen Snelling. She's been the general counsel of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for quite some time. She's been a lawyer here for over 18 years. She's widely regarded as one of the greatest lawyers in all of motorsports. And what she represents in the other leadership here is that not only women are working in motorsports, they're leading in motorsports. They have the knowledge, the capacity, and the ability, and they have the know-how to bring this sport to prominence. I think it's very important that we make that, we reach that diversity on the racial side, with respect to race, with respect to LGBTQ. We are working to develop patterns of reaching out to those communities to make sure we're getting our best and brightest in those areas as well. And we're making great strides to do so.
And what other sporting events besides the Indy 500 are you guys working on coming up in the near future?
Brickyard 400 is the weekend of August 13th, I believe. Our Brickyard 400 event will be NASCAR, a mixture actually of NASCAR and IndyCar. IndyCar races that Saturday. So there'll be races. There'll be an Xfinity and an IndyCar race on Saturday. The main NASCAR race will be Sunday. And for the first time, our main NASCARs will be competing on our road course as opposed to our oval, which we think will lead to more competitive racing. Following that, we will have our BC39 dirt track event, which will be that Wednesday and Thursday, August 17th and 18th, I believe, are the dates for that. Fun event. If you want to get covered in dirt and mud, you've never been to a dirt track event, it is live and in your face, and it is fun to see. So, Marion, we got to get you out here. I'm telling you.
Well, you know, I'm virtual from the south side of Chicago right now, so eventually I'll make my way out there.
I grew up in the Wild Hunters on 113th and Eggleston, and I went to Morgan Park High School. I grew up right up the street from Fingers, so.
Nice.
I made it here from the south side. You too. You can, too.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of fun in Indiana. I need to get there soon. I do, before we wrap up, I do want to ask you, what was it like, you know, having the event this past weekend when you look back to last year where there weren't spectators? I mean, what was the vibe like? What did you hear from fans?
I've heard nothing but positive comments from the fans. If you saw any of the replays, fans were literally climbing the fence because Helio is known as Spider-Man. He won his fourth Indy 500. He becomes a part of an elite group of individuals who won it four times, and he climbs the fence afterwards. After he won, people did not leave. For about an hour after he won, the fans, 135,000 people, were still sitting in the stands, if you could believe it. climbing fences, cheering, going crazy, going wild. That's how much people love this place. And if you could see it at its full capacity, when I started in 2016, we had 420,000 people. There's a concert that goes on the Snake Pit, an EDM concert, where there's 55,000 people that are listening to this concert throughout the race all day. It's truly unbelievable amount of energy all packed into this sport and into this event. And it just, it leaves you with a feeling of just glee and joy and pride when it's over with, that this many people can get together. And typically it's without incident, it's without any type of problems, but nothing but joy and energy and sheer excitement at what everyone just witnessed. And we had a fantastic race, a great winner, and I can't wait for you to see next year.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We're excited to check it out. Jimmy McMillan, Chief Diversity Officer for the Penske Entertainment Corporation. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about the Indy 500 and some efforts to increase diversity in auto sports. I'm Miriam Soap. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soap. Back now to our discussion on the Indianapolis 500 and efforts around auto racing to make the sport more diverse and more inclusive. As always, we love to hear your questions and comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your name, where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. With us now is Rob Reed, team principal for Force Indy. Welcome, Rod.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I want to ask you, Rod, you know, we've heard about some recent efforts to make auto racing more diverse and more inclusive. Do you think positive changes are happening right now?
I do. It's an interesting, the sport, especially in the last couple of years. And as you know, and have talked to some of your guests about the impact of some of our social issues, the murder of George Floyd, the pandemic, all of those things have had a strong impact on motorsports as a whole, but in particular as it relates to people of color. I think there's been this increased interest in African Americans as a whole, and then when we start talking about sports, there's equally amount of interest in sport as well.
But with, you know, with all of the events that happened, do you worry at all that the push for diversity is temporary? It's because everybody, you know, was cooped up last year and had time to actually pay attention to what was going on. And once things get back to normal, it's not going to be a priority anymore.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that. And I think history has shown that we have these crescendos and decrescendos of issues that enter our world here in the United States. And I do worry about that. And I look back at times when our country has come together trying to solve some of our ills. You know, racism has been around since the beginning of our country. And I don't think it's going to go away just because we have this interest in, you know, women as well as other ethnic groups. So I'm hopeful that there at least can be a longer lasting impact, perhaps on the generations to come, to say, how do we want to think about this issue? Do we want to do things that maybe can make it better? But by all means, I'm just sort of waiting to see when will corporate America start to pull back on maybe some of its interest in some of these diversity issues.
Right, right. Well, when it comes to the Black community and motorsports, there is a history there. You know, I'll be honest, I didn't even realize there was one, because I always thought of motorsports as a white sport, just my stereotype, I guess. And so I'm curious to if you can give us a little bit of insight on the history with the Black community for our listeners who may have come from the same background as me, not realizing this.
Yeah, I've talked so much about the fact that in the early 1900s, right at the beginning of the automobile, that Black men and women have been involved in building, coming about with the idea of purchasing, using, and racing automobiles. Matter of fact, just a quick sidebar, there's a story about the famous boxer Jack Johnson, who actually challenged one of the IndyCar drivers, I believe this was like 1910, to a race because he had purchased a pretty progressive car that had a lot of power. It's called a Monarch. And the AAA, the American Automobile Association, would not sanction that race and actually forbade a Goodyear that was the driver to actually run against Jack Johnson. So it started all the way back then when there was this notion that African-Americans couldn't and shouldn't be in this sport and in racing. But since the early 1900s, we've had everything from individuals like Charlie Wiggins and Dewey Gaston, who was known as Rajo Jack, all the way up through the time when we had folks coming to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the rumor that Charlie Wiggins actually worked on one of the cars at the 500, the winning cars, but they wouldn't authenticate that. And so we've been around, we've been involved in the sport, and there's such a strong interest in it. And I think just if we want to go all the way back to horse and buggy and chariots, you know, we had all kinds of folks interested in going fast and in the power of racing. So there's no surprise that we should be involved in it. I think because we have not been allowed probably up through the 50s, maybe early 60s, to really have a major role in motorsports from the organization, the organizing and sanctioning body perspective, you know, folks think that, you know, there was no interest in the Black community. Mm-hmm. Just as a thought here, I don't know if you've ever paid attention to drag racing, but that's probably the most attended by African-Americans in terms of type of racing in America. We've had a two-time champ in Anton Brown. We've had all kinds of women who have run in drag racing. So racing is really, but open wheel racing has not been as open, no pun intended, to women and to people of color.
Well, I do want to talk about some of the efforts that you're doing in this arena. You have Force Indy. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing?
I started in motorsports when I was quite young, as a lot of folks do. I didn't have a lot of background from my family, but I was interested in the 500. I went, actually was so excited about what was going on that I sought the work of a team and actually got involved. And at some point, I think it was back in the mid-80s, I was involved with a young man, Charles Wilson, who became a close friend, and we worked together. He would have predated Willie T. Ribbs as the first African-American at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway had we been successful to get going. But I was involved in racing with a Super B team, very similar to the kind of racing we're doing now in the USF 2000 type of racing. And I always wanted to have an effort that would showcase the talent of African-Americans. So Force Indy became that opportunity for us to do just that. The mission of Force Indy, outside the fact that we want to win every race that we're in, is to give an opportunity to those who you probably would not have had an opportunity, either because of their ethnicity or in these days, because of the dollars that are involved to be in racing. I see Force Indy as a pipeline for those talented individuals that want to go into motorsports.
Mm-hmm. And what is it like working with your organization? Are you working with young people who are interested, or is this the first time they've ever heard about it and maybe it sparks their interest?
In 2006, I started a program called NXG Youth Motorsports that has been supported by great contribution from Lucas Oil and Honda. And we take inner city kids, well, we call them from the underrepresented communities that may not have had any idea about motorsports and put them in go-karts. And when we do that, we give them exposure to the motorsports and automotive industry. Those young people, many of them want to go on and be a part of motorsports and racing, including driving. And I sort of mentor them, encourage them to say, this is the route you want to take to get there, whether that's going to college, whether that's finding a team to work in. And then I would say to them, well, let's go ahead and see if you have the talent to go into racing. And then I take it upon myself to try to help them navigate this sport. This has been typically a pay-to-play sport. If you have the money, you can be involved in racing. And I'd like to change that to a more talent-based sport. So Force Indy starts to do that. So I can take a young person from our NXG program or from other places and say, okay, let me give you an opportunity to test your skill. And I'll take them to a driving school so that they can showcase their natural talent. And then we'll develop them, we'll coach them. And two of them I've selected to be on my team. One was the final choice, Miles Rowe, as a driver for Force Indy. And we've been racing since the beginning of the season, which started in April. The nice thing about what we're doing is these young people have, they don't lose their excitement and enthusiasm for the sport. There's a big cultural divide between the white community and the black community when it comes to racing. Most people have no idea that it's accessible. And they don't understand all the nuances of it. For example, what we're doing with Force Indy, we started at the lowest rung of the ladder system of open wheel racing. That rung includes, it's very similar to baseball. It's like single A, double A, triple A to the majors. For us, it's USF 2000, Indy Pro 2000, Indy Lights, and then you go to IndyCar. So we're giving that understanding, that experience to these young people, and we then try to help them navigate what it takes to get into the majors, if you will. Mm-hmm. So it's been very interesting. The very first two hires that I did were two young people out of my NXG program, Stuart Kelly and Derek Morris, who actually were mechanical and engineering backgrounds. So they certainly raced in their lives, but they wanted to just to be part of the team with in other roles outside of being a race car driver.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also fascinating to me. I just think about when you're talking about accessibility and sort of, it makes me think of other sports, fencing, figure skating, where it's like, if you don't have the money to continue and keep, you know, getting lessons and getting further and buying the equipment, like you're out. And so, you know, how do you make this sport accessible in a way that, you know, money isn't the only object? You mentioned talent. I mean, are you the only one doing this?
Well, I certainly hope not. I think there's been no doubt about my interest in bringing young people and giving them a shot, so to speak, based on their previous experience or talent. I think there are others who may do that, but it's so heavily driven by someone who has access to, you know, financial resources to go to a team and say, I have, you know, $350,000, which is what it takes to race on our level, and I'd like to drive. That team and a lot of the teams out there will say, oh, that's great, let's get you going, as opposed to, well, you know what, maybe we need to give you some coaching and some more experience, and let's try to bring you in and develop your talent. I just don't know of very many people who are doing that. But for me, I start off with, you've got an interest, you have the talent, let's get you to a driving school, then let's see if you can kind of move up that way and provide the dollars for them to do so.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, when we talk about money and these fees and all that, what does that cover? I'm just curious, like, is this to pay for everybody that's working on the team? Is it an entry fee?
It's amazing. It's really, really broad. If you think about the basics, you have to have a car, you have to have a motor, the team that's going to work on it, the engineers, mechanics, some basic folks in the office that are going to be working with communication and purchasing and so forth. And then you do have entry fees for the different events. On top of that, you've got your maintenance costs like fuel and oil, tires, which is probably one of the biggest expenses we have are tires because we use them so much. As I mentioned, that our level is about $350,000 to $400,000 a year. By the time you get to IndyCar, you're talking about $10 million wow. to run a team. So the cost is just, it's really cost prohibitive for someone who just wants to do it because they're talented.
Right.
You know, I think about how I got involved and when I did that, the fees that were charged back then were still pretty high, but at least they were a little more manageable because there was more popularity and you could find more people that were willing to do it and maybe give you a chance. If they had a car, they would let you drive. I don't see that as much today. I think mm-hmm. it really, really is those who are bringing money.
Well, what's next for Force Indy? What do you have on the horizon?
Well, we're excited about the fact that we just finished racing at Lucas Oil Raceway Park in Indianapolis, and we did well there, first time on an oval. We are going to Road America on the week of June 17th, 18th, and 19th, and we hope to finish really, really well there. We have four more weekend events. We usually run a doubleheader or a tripleheader at those tracks. And we're wanting to finish the season well and start looking to next year and maybe compete for a championship. I'm also looking for new people to bring into the sport, whether they're looking at a young lady right now to work on the team. We're also trying to find folks who want to come into motorsports. And I think success to me would be if we are able to have these young people work at other teams, not just mine. Mm-hmm. So if we can train them and give them the tools so that they can go on and work with others, to me, that would be success.
All right. Well, we have about 30 seconds left. What would you say to someone listening right now that might be interested in racing? What's the first step they need to take?
I would say make sure you get into a program, whether it's go-karts or a driving and racing school, to hone your skills. And then I would also tell you to have a good plan B and C. Go to college, you know, try to get a paying job instead of one where you have to pay.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Rod Reed, team principal for Force Indy. Thank you to you and all our guests for taking the time today. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. You can find us also on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. Join us tomorrow as we talk about art, social media, and vacation ideas. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All in.